The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A high-ranking Russian general, Lieutenant General Igor Kirillov, has been assassinated in Moscow. The bomb was hidden inside an electric scooter. It killed Kirillov and his assistant outside a residential building just a few kilometres from the Kremlin. It was a remotely detonated blast. Now, Ukraine had recently accused Kirillov of overseeing the use of banned chemical weapons in the war. But the question is, who was responsible for his death? What does it mean for the tensions between Russia and Ukraine? Joining us now, Scott Lucas, Professor and Political Analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College in Dublin. Scott, good morning.
Very good morning to you, Pat.
Now, when I first heard of this overnight, what had happened, I'm wondering, who was responsible? Could it be that Ukraine got so deep into Moscow they could do it? Could it be enemies of Putin? Could it be a false flag operation to justify some sort of attack, an outrageous attack, perhaps, on Ukraine?
It is Ukraine, Pat. It has not been officially stated by Kyiv, but about 2 hours ago, an official in the State Security Service of Ukraine, the SBU, went to a number of media outlets and said, yeah, we're responsible for this explosive that was placed on this scooter that killed Kirillov and his assistant. He or she went initially to Ukrainian outlets, Kyiv Independent and RBC Ukraine. And then the source has also gone to France's AFP and to the UK's Guardian. So, yeah, although we're waiting for, you know, an official statement from a Ukrainian official later, it is now quite clear that Kyiv has, in an unprecedented operation, hit one of the top generals in Russia.
Mm. Now, at the same time, if it could be opportune for Ukraine to claim credit for something maybe perpetrated by Chechens or whatever, to suggest that they have infiltrated deep into, if you like, the military establishment in Moscow. But you're discounting that.
No, I am discounting it, Pat. I mean, as like you, when I woke up to the news, certainly one theory is that given, you know, protracted infighting amongst Russian agencies, there's infighting within the military, there's infighting between the military and state security services, there are political rivalries, whether Lieutenant General Kirillov had fallen foul of someone. But no, the statements from Ukraine are not just simply to take advantage. They are definitively to say, yeah, this is, you know, it's our fingerprints on this. And Ukraine does have a track record of assassinations inside Russia, albeit not at this high level. They have hit, for example, the daughter of Vladimir Putin's leading propagandist, Alexander Dugin. They meant to kill Dugin. They, in fact, killed Darya Duhina. And they killed one of Russia's leading military bloggers in an explosion in a cafe a couple of years ago as well.
Now, a couple of things spring to mind. One, the chilling effect this is going to have on the military leadership in the Kremlin, who will feel vulnerable and will have to mount extra protection. Also, the second question is how Ukrainian underground spies or whatever got access to the amount of explosive, which was significant to do the damage it did.
Yeah, let's take that second one first. And that is, you know, did Ukraine carry this out with its own operatives who somehow got into Russia, or what is probably more likely, did they have local agents in Russia? How were they able to make contact with those agents in Russia to get about 300 grams of explosive? That's what we're being told by the Russians was involved. How were they able to surveil Kirillov for such a protracted time and to know the exact timings of his movements? That's a pretty sophisticated operation with a great deal of preparation, and it does show a big vulnerability amongst the Russians. Now, how will Moscow try to cover this up? While saying they're carrying out an investigation, while talking about how awful Ukraine is, and how it's Russia who's victim over its invasion of Kyiv, they will retaliate. What form of retaliation it will take? Most likely, you're going to see missile and drone strikes across Ukraine very soon. Now, of course, the Russians have been doing this for years, hitting civilian sites, but it will be a large missile and drone strike to try to cover up his hurt feelings over this assassination.
Now, besides the coup in terms of eliminating a top military official, what is the rationale for killing this particular guy, Kirillov? What had he been charged with? What had he done?
I think, in addition to just simply rattling the Kremlin, to say the least, with his killing, Kirillov was a particular target of the Ukrainians on two accounts. One is that he is head of Russia's chemical, biological, radiological units or radiation units. But the second reason on top of that is that using that position, he put out the wildest disinformation to try to undermine Ukraine, to try to break support for Ukraine. For example, I've just posted a video which is of him making the claim that Ukraine blew up one of its own dams in the south of the country, flooding the area, killing many people. Now, why would they do that? He said they blew up that dam so they could spread combat mosquitoes that had been bred in U.S. labs inside the country. None of that is true, but it is the type of propaganda that is recycled by some Western activists, including in Ireland, to try to undermine Ukraine's resistance. And so they're making a point not only in terms of hitting the Russian military, but hitting Moscow's disinformation campaign.
Now, what will be the reaction from the United States, indeed from NATO? Will they suggest that Ukraine has crossed some sort of line by getting almost to the heart of the Kremlin and killing a senior general?
They won't say that officially, Pat, because I think that's too much of possibly playing into the Kremlin's hands about how it is supposedly the victim here. There may be coded messages, however, that come out publicly about everybody needing to, you know, consider what they're doing, which would be a signal to Ukraine about, do you really want to go this far? And I am keeping my eyes open for what is said privately and then possibly leaked to the press about U.S. or European displeasure over this. We know that it took months for the U.S. and the U.K. to lift their ban on Ukraine's strike on long-range, on targets inside Russia with long-range missiles. Will this put the shivers up U.S. and the U.K. again, fearing Moscow's retaliation, or will they stand by Ukraine realizing, look, this is an all-out conflict in which Ukraine is trying to survive? And so hitting the Russian military in the heart of Moscow, that's allowed as well.
Putin's difficulties at the moment, I mean, he's 71 years of age. He apparently expects to live forever because that's the nature of the man, and he won't. We know that. But, you know, the story is going around. He will fight to the death of the last North Korean in Ukraine. And, of course, the flight of Assad to Moscow, and reports that Assad had deposited something like $220 million in Russian banks over the last couple of years in anticipation of having to have a bolt hole in the event of everything going wrong, which it has. All of this seems a bit messy for Putin at the moment.
It is beyond messy, Pat. What you're seeing, and we've talked about this in the past, is that Vladimir Putin made a gamble in February 2022 that he could conquer Ukraine, seizing its capital, overthrowing, possibly killing its leadership within days. Now, when that didn't work, he got himself involved in what has become a protracted conflict, which is now almost 3 years in terms of direct invasion. He still only has about 25% of Ukraine, and Ukrainian troops hold part of Russia, the Kursk region, and he can't get them out. Beyond that, you've referred to two other issues. One is the fact that he took a heavy defeat in Syria, spending a lot of military capital for over a decade to prop up Bashar al-Assad, who collapsed within 2 weeks. And at the same time, his international isolation continues to grow, which is why he's having to rely on North Korean troops now, to try to replenish his forces.
Yeah, now you may have seen that Bashar al-Assad in a statement said that he wanted to stay and fight it out, but the Russians airlifted him to Moscow.
I'm sorry. I mean, it's inappropriate to laugh at times of, you know, when many people have been killed in Syria by Bashar al-Assad, but that statement was absolutely ludicrous. What happened, just to let listeners know the full context, is that on the Friday before he was defeated, Bashar al-Assad went into Moscow and asked Vladimir Putin, look, what can you do? How can you help me out? These rebels are advancing on me. Putin quite clearly said, Russia's not going to intervene to save your skin with air operations or with ground operations. Assad went back to Damascus on the Saturday, and on Sunday morning, he fled without telling any of his ministers, without telling his senior advisors, without telling his own military. He went to a Russian base in Western Syria And the Russians then did get him out. They said they would at least allow him and his family to live in Moscow. But Assad saying, I was there ready to fight. I was going to make a stand. And it was the Russians who evacuated me because there were drone attacks on the base. Yeah, pull the other one, mate.
Now, going back to Putin, you know, when we think of Russia and Russia's antagonism towards the West and all sorts of other things he's embroiled himself in, we think of one man and a regime that has, you know, just one color, the Putin color. But you mentioned earlier infighting and faction fighting within the security elements. What is going on there? Is there already a battle for succession?
It's not a battle for succession, but it is a battle for control. And again, if we could just do a flashback, Pat, you might remember that in, I think, June of 2023, there was a serious rebellion against Putin by the Wagner Group mercenaries, who Putin had used for years in operations, not just in Ukraine, but in Africa and in the Middle East. Now, he was able to defeat that rebellion. He eventually, I think, oversaw the assassination of the Wagner Group leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin. But that rebellion was supported by certain people within the Russian military. Now, Putin, while being able to suppress that, still counts on impressing the military and saying that he's in control by saying we are on the path to winning. When he doesn't win, he has to replace military commanders, and he has to hope that those commanders will stay loyal to him. He's been able to survive so far because he's really shrunk the inner circle. Only a few trusted advisors now, people that won't turn against him. That helps him maintain control in the short term, but it means that the area, you know, the range of expertise that he has, military and politically, if things are not going well beyond Moscow, that's diminishing. That's the dynamic I'm looking at.
The last area, I suppose, is when you look at Bashar al-Assad and his flight to Moscow. And I'm sure he had anticipated that he might one day, if things went wrong, end up in Moscow. For Vladimir Putin, there is no refuge. If things go wrong for him in Moscow, who's going to take him in?
Well, North Korea. You know, I'm not sure they would. And certainly if Putin fell, the vassal state next to him, Belarus, would turn against him. No, he's got nowhere to hide. I don't expect him to wind up in the International Criminal Court on that arrest warrant over deporting Ukrainian children. But I think at some point he simply has to try to hope no one catches up with him in Russia if he falls from power. And that's why he thumps his chest. It's not just that Vladimir Putin blusters that he can win. He's got to pretend he can win because he has no alternative. Which is a message that we should take on board, not just in terms of looking at the future of Vladimir Putin, but in terms of the reality of maintaining that support for Ukraine and of international support for Ukraine, that this support at the end of the day is not about Vladimir Putin's future, it's to prevent him from conquering Kyiv and from undermining other countries. And simply if he says, look, I've got shiny weapons I can use against you in a last resort effort to hold on to power, is no reason why everybody should be frit and abandon Kyiv.
It's extraordinary. This man whose kleptocracy has bestowed upon him riches beyond the dreams of avarice, what use is it to him?
Well, you know what they said about Ozymandias a long time ago in a 19th century poem, that at the end of the day, you look and those feet are made of clay, no matter how many palaces you have or how much gold you have stocked away in the Kremlin's vaults.
Scott Lucas, Professor and Political Analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Curb your cravings this winter with My Mochi Ice Cream. Rich, creamy, premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, soft dough. My Mochi Ice Cream is gluten-free and comes in tons of amazing flavors like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream. Your taste buds won't believe it's only around 70 calories per piece. Indulge in the joyfully chill flavors of My Mochi ice cream today. Look for the purple box of My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a store near you.